Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, despite all the messages your children, preteens, and teenagers are receiving from TV, social media, and friends on Facebook, no messages are more important than the ones they receive from you, their parents. Regardless of how your adolescents brush you off, talk back, or ignore you now, as my guest today, Tom Gagliano, points out, you were your children's first hero. And whether you realize it or not, even as your children mature into adolescence, they continue to look to you and your spouse as role models on how they should or should not behave as adults. And adolescents may not realize it, and you may not realize it, but in subtle and not so subtle ways, they are modeling your behavior, good or bad, on you, their parents. And so what kind of messages are you sending to your offspring? And note that message isn't limited solely to verbal communication. Often it's more your expression and how you react to your sons or daughters when they're around. How do you react to the news, good or bad? Do you act ashamed when they fail a test, play badly in a big game, or drop out of drama club? Do you take time to listen and take sincere interest in their problems and concerns at school or in teen relationships? Perhaps equally important is your outlook on life in general and your compassion, composure, and self-esteem. Do you appear happy in your own skin and confident in your relationships with them and with others? Do you and your spouse appear united as a loving couple? Do you parent confidently and lovingly as a team? And do you effectively handle stress, take a family leadership role, and respond calmly and constructively in difficult circumstances? Beyond their health, safety, and a strong moral compass, what in fact do you want and expect from your offspring? Are you attempting to pre-plan their adult lives? In his book, my guest Tom Gagliano observes that true heroes let their children explore who they want to be, instead of imprisoning them in predetermined roles. But unfortunately, we parents can imprison our offspring by passing on to them our fears, prejudices, and shortcomings, as well as our strengths, without even being aware of what we're doing. And Tom is here today to help us understand why we so often do this, and how you and I can improve our parenting by better understanding ourselves. And Tom Gagliano is author of a brand new book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper, The Cleanup Cost Can Last a Lifetime. I love that title. And Tom has worn many hats. As a young man, he was a successful small business entrepreneur with a proven track record in the New York area. And he shifted focus around 10 years ago to helping others and returned to school at age 51 to receive a master's in social work. And he's now a successful author, life coach, and relationship expert, helping clients to pinpoint answers and eliminate obstacles to loving, fulfilling relationships. And hello, Tom, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, is it true that rough patches in our parenting can be explained at least in part by negative messages that we received from our parents years ago? And how does this happen?
Well, first of all, we all have to remember that one message we received early on is a good son or a good boy, a good girl, should never talk negatively about their parents.
Yeah.
And that alone will set up a problem, because it's okay to be angry or disappointed. It doesn't mean we didn't love our parents. It doesn't mean they didn't do the best that they can. But we really want to instill in our children the very best of what we have. And the only way to really do that is to take a little inventory on the messages we received in our childhood.
Yeah.
You know, how did we view conflict in our childhood? Was it resolved? Was conflict resolved, or was somebody always yelling and screaming or shutting down or walking out or leaving the house?
Yeah.
And if we in our childhood did not see resolution to conflict, we're not going to know how to do that as adults with our children. Now,
yeah, it's not just conflict with the child and the parent. It's also conflict between the parents, I would think, would have major.
Without a doubt. And that's a great point you make. You know, what happens in childhood is, you know, you have mom and dad, or it could be just the mom or just the dad at the top of the pyramid. And if they are nurturing each other spiritually, physically, emotionally, in a healthy way, child just has to be a child. That's all a child has to be.
Yeah,
but when there's a problem going on up top, even in a single family home, when somebody's not getting their needs met, all of a sudden the child realizes we got a problem. Some sirens go off. And they start to create different roles to fix the problem up at the top. They go in self-survival mode. And that's really where we get a lot of the roles we play in our life, that people please a role where we say yes all the time. Because it's too painful to say no. Or the caretaker, the defiant role, the perfectionist. We fall into these little roles because we feel these are roles we need to play in order to survive our childhood.
Yeah, isn't that tragic when a young child has to try to play a role like that? The most important thing we can do is let children be children.
Just be children, you know, love them for who they are. And the ironic thing is if they get the message that they can be who they want to be, not who you want them to be, they will flock towards you. They will listen to you. And one of the things I tell parents all the time is you can't control your kids' behavior. It really doesn't work. Sure, it works at a young age, but if we're twisting their arm to do what we want them to do, when they get old enough in those teen years, when the handcuffs are off, when they're out on their own, they're going to do what they want to do, not what we tell them to do. So,
and they're just going to resent you for trying to micromanage.
Oh, big time. Big time. Yeah, and what I try to tell them is instead of controlling their behavior, what about supplying them with the tools to control their own behavior, where they want to do the right thing, where they want to make healthy decisions? Now, that comes from creating a healthy environment at home where they can talk to you about whatever their feelings are. If they want to talk to you about their curiosity with drugs, if they want to talk to you about their sexual orientation, their fears. If a child doesn't have someone safe at home to talk to and talk about their struggles, they will develop negative core beliefs. And when they get to those teenage years, that's when they're really going to act them out with bullying, with addictions, domestic violence when they get older, because they're not processing their feelings. They're developing negative core beliefs, negative sense of self, and that pain will be acted out or acted in with isolation, depression, and other things.
So painful when a child's main concern is to keep something from the parent, rather than share their concerns and, you know, what they're worried about. Maybe they're being bullied at school or whatever. And to hide, if their intent is to hide that from the parents, it's so self-destructive because you can't really help them that way, or they can't help.
I just heard today on the news that 70% of kids hide things on their phone from their parents.
Oh, brother.
70%. That's a pretty big percentage. And I also know a statistic that said more 12-year-old kids have viewed more pornography than 50-year-old people.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Think about these statistics. It means that, first, we don't know what's going on with our kids. And I tell parents all the time, you better be curious. You better know who their friends are. You better know the sites they go on.
Yeah,
get nosy.
So
and
so
if they
easier for kids to access that kind of thing.
Wrong without a doubt.
Now than it used to be with it.
Yeah, well, they know how to do this better than we do. So a lot of parents are working nowadays. They're not home, they have to pay attention to what their children are doing when they're not home. As those computer sites built, the computers are very...
iPads and iPhones and all this other stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Well, on your website, you state that that your approach begins with self-awareness. And why is self-awareness so important to effective parenting?
Well, if I don't have good self-awareness, I'm not going to really know what positive actions I need to take. And if I don't maintain those actions with consistent boundaries, you know, not boundaries Monday, Thursday, and Friday, but 7 days a week, I won't start to instill in my children healthy habits. And healthy habits is what's going to segue to making healthy decisions.
Yeah, that's so true. But, well, what are some of the aspects of your children's future adult lives that we may be impacting by our messages to them? I know it's things I wouldn't even think of, like, career and intimacy. There's a whole raft of things, I guess, that we impact.
Yeah, well, you know, I remembered my 8-year-old son watching a baseball game and asking me, "Hey, Dad, how come the kids in the stand root so hard for their favorite baseball player?" And I said, "Those baseball players are the heroes." And he said, "You know, Dad, they may be my heroes someday, but you're always going to be my first hero."
Oh,
and
what a
really,
wonderful message he gave.
Yeah, we are our children's first heroes. And what happens, what parents do that I see today that is hurting their children is they overindulge their children. You know, a lot of parents are working today, and they feel a little bit guilty, and they feel a little bit bad. And what they do is they buy their children things in lieu of talking to their children about their feelings. So a child that is it grows up with the message, well, if I feel sad or I feel bad, I go buy a video game to numb my feelings, is very similar to the guy that buys a bottle of scotch to numb his feelings.
Yeah,
it's still medicating the feelings instead of talking about the feelings.
Yeah.
So, you know, parents need to know that that guilt that they feel, the worst thing they can do is overindulge their children. Parents also need to understand that it's not always great to rush in that helicopter parent that rushes in and fix the problem. You know, a child needs to know that their parents are always there if they're in impending danger. No doubt about it. The parent needs
to
step up.
When they rush in like that, they often fix the problem all wrong. They fly off the handle or, you know, without really understanding why their child did it.
But worse than that, they're not helping their children, as I said, supply them with the tools to control their own behavior. They're not helping their children develop coping mechanisms. Child won't learn how to handle situations, how to cope. That's the child that grows up into a teenager or into your early adulthood, and they don't know how to get out of their own messes. They're confused. They don't know how to handle it. They haven't developed the self-esteem because they haven't learned how to cope earlier on. And, you know, those are the parents that the kids are going to get mad at. They're going to get mad at the parent who rushed in. They're going to get angry at them because they're going to feel like, I don't know how to handle things. I don't know how to cope.
They don't understand my problems at all, and they just rush in like a bull in a china shop and do more harm than good.
Right.
Well, most
right.
experts contend that most of our adult fears and inhibition and prejudices are implanted in the subconscious at a very young age. And looking back, if we haven't been really that effective as parents when our children were infants or toddlers or even early grade school, what, if anything, can we teach and guide them now that they're adolescents? Is it too late for us? Or
No, it's not too late. You know, remember, adolescence is when the hormones are going crazy. It's when the person tries to detach from their parents in a healthy way, and there's an inner fight with the adolescent. They have their values, hopefully. They've learned good values, and they have their instincts to just belong to certain people, to feel a part of certain things, and they have an inner problem. And I think that, again, I go back to parents setting up a safe place for the children to talk to them, a place where their child can tell them how they feel without the nonverbal expression, the look, the disappointment, the judgmentation. It's very important to be able to set that up. And it's very, very important for parents to understand that when your child really struggles, don't react and jump in. If they're struggling and they're not trying to solicit something from you, they're really hurting, there's plenty of time to fix them, plenty of time to guide them. Instead, just think about, at that age, what you would have wanted to hear from your parents. Let compassion guide what you say and the way you say it.
Yeah, like if I were failing a subject in school, I would, instead of my parents frowning and, why is this D on your report card or whatever, I'd want them to sit down and talk to them about why I was having so much trouble with math or whatever, and how they could help me learn it better so at a slower pace, so that, you know, maybe get a tutor or whatever, but there's so many effective ways you can do that without criticizing. Or the worst thing of all is when people impose some kind of a discipline because the grades are suffering when they don't really understand why they're suffering.
Well, that's it. That's it. You know, to come to you if you've created a safe environment at home where your child could come to you and say, you know, I'm really struggling with this, and know that they're not going to be yelled and judged and ridiculed, and then the parent can say, you know, I see you're in pain, or I see you're struggling with this.
Yeah.
How can I help you? Let's talk about how we can work as a team to help each other. And if
wouldn't
that
it be
doesn't
great
happen,
if your son or daughter suggested that maybe they give up a sport or something because they're having trouble with school, rather than you saying you're not playing on the soccer team anymore because your grades are bad.
Yeah.
The child says, well, maybe I'm spending too much time on sports and I'm going to better allocate my time or whatever, and comes up with that suggestion himself or herself, that would be so much better.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of parents, as you know, they live their lives through their children.
Yeah.
The sports, I've seen dads, many kids cry on this ball field because they're disappointing their father. They're not living up to their father's expectations. I know I had an incident with my son where he was pitching in a Little League game. He was a starting pitcher, and he didn't pitch well that day, and he was very sad.
Yeah.
And when I went to the dugout to speak to him afterwards, again, trying to be a good dad, I'm saying, how should I show up? Where should I ask him how he's feeling, what he's feeling, or should I help him with his pitching? And basically, in the dugout in front of the kids, he told me, he said, Dad, I need a hug. That's all he needed. He needed a hug. He needed to know his dad was behind him. He was going to be okay. He didn't
need... Your son have great insight.
Yeah, he does. But you know what? That piggybacks to creating a safe place where he can ask me, what he could tell me what he needs from me without feeling judged or that I'm going to turn him down or whatever it is. And it was the first piece of creating that safe place for him to come to me that piggybacked the second piece. And, you know, I want to tell you that, you know, my kids can talk to me. In fact, my daughters tell me way more than I want to know. Way more. But that's another issue entirely. But they do talk to me. You know, they do come to me. And, you know, and I look to all the parents out there that's saying, I don't want to be their best friends. My children have consequences. They know if they choose a certain action that there will be a consequence for the action they choose. If my son doesn't clean his room, he's not going to get his allowance. If he's on the computer games for more than he's supposed to be, he's going to lose the computer games for a week. So I am still in charge of rules here. I'm still in charge of what I do here. But they know that if they choose certain choices, they have certain consequences. But
you know,
the message
I love in your book how you said that setting boundaries like that actually makes life easier for your offspring than having it real unclear what the boundaries are, so that, like you say, they know if they don't clean up their room, they don't get their allowance or whatever, and yet it still gives them discretion on when they do it and how they do it. It just needs to get done. But
thank you, because that is a very important point. Boundaries to people that don't put boundaries down think that it creates a very uncomfortable situation, when the reality is boundaries make life much easier. And the message we always want to give our children is when they make mistakes or when they choose a poor action, that they're not bad kids that deserve to be punished.
Yeah.
We don't want to tell them they're bad kids who deserve to be punished.
Yeah.
We want to tell them you made a poor choice, you need consequences for that choice, and what better choice could you make the next time? Because that's what mistakes are supposed to be, opportunities to grow.
And when you're adults and when you make a bad choice, you'll probably suffer negative consequences, because that's just the way life is. So that's,
we have to we have to prepare them for life. We have to prepare our children to face life on life's terms. You know, life's not going to treat them like daddy or mommy does sometimes, and we need to let them know that. You know, we need to let them prepare them for that. And the way to prepare them is to build their self-esteem, integrity enough, where they make healthy choices and they could be productive. But to know that if they get themselves in a jam, they could always come back and talk to mom and dad. You know, mom and dad are not there just to give them trophies.
That's so crucial. Well, it almost always makes sense as parents to address offspring as a unified front, but do you have any tips on parenting for a recently divorced man or woman who wants to continue to guide their offspring? Any
great
suggestions
question
on how to get along with your ex so that the kids don't feel torn between the two of you? You know, that's so often one parent speaks badly of the other one. And
Well, I put this piece in my book, and there's three keys here, and I came... you know, my first book's called The Problem Was Me, and quite honestly, my parents were divorced from each other three times, so I think I have an idea about what it's like to come from a dysfunctional, crazy family.
Yeah, three strikes, you're out.
Exactly, to each other, no less. But anyway, the three things I tell parents is, number one, be the best dad you can be or be the best mom you can be.
Yeah.
You can't, if you're a dad, worry about what the mom's doing. If you're a mom, you can't change what the dad's doing.
No.
Keep being the best.
Moms can't be dads, and dads can't be moms.
No, just keep your again, everything we spoke about, safe environment for communications, being curious with your children, you know, giving them consequences, healthy consequences. Keep doing things like that. Two, never manipulate your children. If you're using them as a pawn to get back at your ex, you're giving
horrible.
Them a terrible message. You're telling them that they're not important, that they don't count. And I want to tell you, you know, that's the cleanup course can last a lifetime, because that's going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
And the third piece is always remember that you're their first heroes. If you remarry, have another family, don't forget to always treat them like they're important in your life, like they're a priority in your life.
So
and if
crucial.
You could do those three things, you can have a healthy divorce.
Yeah, especially if you start another family and then the child of the first spouse feels neglected somehow. That would be a horrible message to
get. It's horrible. It's horrible. And, you know, those are scars, as I said earlier, the negative core belief. Those are scars that get implanted that will be acted out, will sabotage their happiness, because I believe that childhood messages will impact the intimacy the person has in their life.
Yeah.
They will impact their parenting skills, the careers they choose. Every piece of their life will be impacted by the messages they receive in childhood.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to where rubber meets the road. Give us a couple of practical suggestions on how we as middle-aged parents can build and sustain a warm, nurturing family environment where our children or teens will have confidence they need to focus on themselves. Like you said, you've somewhat covered this before, but what are they like when your kids are teenagers and, you know, they want to tune you out? How do you get that nurturing family?
It begins with communication.
Yeah.
First, you need to choose your battles. You need to know when to choose being right and when to be choose being close. You know, if all you're going to go to your children is with the self-righteousness of I'm right and you're wrong, that's never going to bring closeness. You need
so
to go in first and listen. What's going on?
Why can't I do
you?
This because I said so?
Yeah, exactly. That won't work. It might work when they're little, but again, when their handcuffs are off and they get old enough, they're going to do what they want to do. So go to your children with the motive that you're going to listen. Say, hey, what's going on? You know, I care about you. What's going on in your life? Tell me. You're really important to me. I want to hear how you feel, how your feelings are. You know, many of us never came from childhoods where anybody said to us, hey, how you feeling, kid? How you doing? What's going on? Many of us never came from that.
Yeah.
So that first piece of curiosity and going to your children with the motive to listen, not to be right, is a very important piece in itself.
And you better be sincere. So many times, so many people will ask a question, and then before the child, in this case, even has a chance to fully answer, they're already thinking of what their next comment should be, or they're ready to move on.
You got it. No agenda. No agenda. You're going to go in there with an agenda. They're going to sniff it out, and they're going to put their fists up, I mean, mindfully, to defend themselves, and their ability to hear you will be closed off. When two people are victims to each other in a conversation, nobody's listening. So if I want to be right, they're going to just, you know, put their arms up, not listen to a word you're saying, and I don't care how right you are, it's not getting in. If I choose closeness instead, maybe then I can have a conversation without them putting their fist in the air and being able to hear me. But first, I need to be able to hear them.
Yeah, there's nothing more futile than a conversation when both people are 100% convinced they're right and the other one's wrong.
You got it. And that's between couples, parents, kids, everyone.
Yeah, well, let's talk a bit about your brand-new book, Don't Put Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. From diaper in the title, it sounds like your book is intended primarily for new parents of infants and very young children. Will middle-aged parents of preteens and teens, even young adults off to college or an apartment or wherever, also benefit from reading your book?
Sounds absolutely. Like it probably would help young parents the most, only because we begin with childhood messages. But, you know, it segues into grandparents. You know, grandparents today are playing different roles. They call back into action. A lot of the the parents are working now because of finances, and all of a sudden the grandparents, who were supposed to be just sitting on the sidelines and having fun, they're getting called back into action. So my book
they
talks
need to be
about
good listeners too, and understand, you know, really relate to the grandchildren when they do fill that role.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a lot of things changing in our world. You know, we have texting and we have computers, emails, so kids are not talking as much as they used to.
No,
so, you know, a lot of teenagers are out there and they don't know how to communicate. We have a lot of problems with pornography today. You know, kids, as I said before, they're coming home from school, they're viewing pornography in sixth, seventh grade. By the time they're in high school, they've completely objectified the other sex. And it's going to create a tremendous intimacy problem in our country. Kids are not going to know how to be intimate other than sexually, how to hold hands and kiss and cuddle, because everything's going to be, you know, based on objectification, body parts. It is a very dangerous piece in our economy. So I think that my book hits on a lot of major areas, not just for the young parent, but for the parents that that have teenagers, for grandparents, again, that have been called back to action, how they need to unite with the parents and have one message for the children. If the grandparents are giving the children certain messages and the parents are giving the children other messages, the children will become confused. And when a child is confused, again, they start to develop the negative core beliefs, like, what's the matter with me?
I think your book would be a great gift to give your adult children that maybe your new parents are expecting as a Christmas present.
I do. And the book has only been out about a month, but I've been getting a lot of nice feedback, the kind of feedback that, you know, that I want to hear. You know, the feedback of, oh, your book is great, it's wonderful, that's not what it's about. It's just about, you know, I can use this in my practice with kids. I was able to have a conversation with my teenager when going by some of the things you suggested I do. You know, there's a lot of positive feedback, and my first book was a bestseller, The Problem Was Me, and it talks more about individualism, because, you know, at the end of the day, the most important relationship we have is not the one we have with our kids or our spouse or our parents, it's the one we have with ourselves. You know, if we're not good with who we are, comfortable in our own skin, that is going to affect every relationship around us. And that's really more of what my first book
talks about. Be a slave to our inner voice.
that destructive inner voice. Let me tell you, you know, I call it the warden in my first book. And that little voice inside your head that's always telling you what you're doing wrong, never allowing you to celebrate your victories, can sabotage every part of your life.
And so the same with parenting. If we don't really understand ourselves and what's motivating us, we can't really be effective parents or effective anything, I don't think.
No, we got to be mindful of the messages we're giving to our children. We have to be aware of that. I can't tell my child to work on themselves if I don't work on myself.
No.
I can't tell my child to ask for help when they're struggling if they see that I'm too stubborn to ask for help.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's very difficult to give them what I don't have.
Well, where should we go to? Where do we best go to preview and purchase your book?
They can go to my website, theproblemwasme.com, and I have some interesting media links there and some YouTubes about substance abuse, about a lot of different things, because I talk about bullying and a lot of different things. Or they could go right to Amazon.com and put in "Don't Put Your Crap in My Kid's Diaper," and they can order it that way.
It was easy to find on there. There are a lot of books
I would think so.
In conclusion, in his book, my guest Tom Gagliano opens with a simple admission: when we as parents think we are doing our best, it can be unpleasant to hear someone say we can do better. But then he adds, parenting may be the most difficult and important responsibility any of us will undertake, and one of the most valuable insights we can have is to understand our own shortcomings and to know when to ask others for help. And even our best parenting efforts have distortions and can be improved, and therefore I highly recommend you preview and Tom's new book, Don't Put Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. And don't let the title fool you. The book offers insight into parenting and grandparenting, whatever your children's ages. And thank you so much, Tom, for your most helpful insights.
Thank you. Pleasure. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And best of success on your new book, and happy holidays to you and to all our listeners out there.
Right, the holidays, and here we go back to our family of origin, right?
Sometime time we may be able to talk about your other book of the role-playing we do at family gatherings.
And it's absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tom, and have a great holiday season.
You too, buddy. Take care.
A lot of us in middle age have been married to the same life partner for over 20 years. Others of us may be in our second or third marriage, but we are committed that this one is going to last until death do we part. And whether you've been married 4 years or 40, you and your spouse most likely have passed the early honeymoon stage. And I bet if I polled a cross-section of middle-aged couples, a majority would say their marriage was good, but it could be better. After all, there are the kids, our careers, our church, community, and so many obligations, and we don't have a lot of time for each other. And anyway, we've been together so long that a lot of the bloom has worn off the rosebud. But I'd also guess that most of you long married couples would sincerely like to recharge your marriages, transform them from good to great, boost mutual commitment, passion, and fun, eliminate a few negatives, and build upon the strengths you already have. And my next guest, Dr. Terry Horbuch, known far and wide as the Love Doctor, has been on our program before, but I've invited her back because her book, Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great, just made its debut as a paperback and an e-book. And Dr. Terry is here to highlight her book and to offer a couple suggestions to help you make your marriage great. And to refresh your memory, Dr. Terry Horbuch is a research professor at the University of Michigan and also a sociology professor at Oakland U. She's also a marriage therapist with over 20 years' experience of counseling of couples, hosts the weekly The Love Doctor radio show, and continuously since 1986 has served as project director of the National Institutes of Health study that tracked the same 373 married couples over the past 30 years. And hello, Dr. Terry, and welcome back to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thanks so much for having me again, Roy. Great to be here.
Well, before we get into details of your new book, let me ask you a couple of quick questions. First of all, in most cases, it's easy or hard to transform a marriage from good to great. Is that something that will take years and is very hard to accomplish, or will it require a major sacrifice for one or both spouses?
Well, it's a really good question, Roy. What I have found when I've been following these couples now for almost three decades is that it does not take a lot of hard work. Instead, it takes consistent small changes to take it from good to great. So not a lot of years and hard work, but small changes that you're going to make regularly, every week or every day.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Well, is your book intended for couples whose marriage is on the rocks and serious trouble, say from physical, emotional abuse by one partner or infidelity, something like that?
No, actually, my book, Roy, is written and designed for couples who love each other. They feel that their marriage or relationship is so good or even great, and they want to improve it. They want to make it better. So it's not designed for couples who are having serious problems like substance abuse, mental illness, and other kinds of really serious issues.
This book
will not be enough for those couples.
No, probably no book would be enough for them. I would think they need some counseling or something.
I agree.
We don't have time to discuss all five of the steps, but let's touch on one or two. I like rule three especially because it hit home with me. Have a daily briefing. What is your suggested 10-minute rule, and why is it perhaps the most important action you can take to keep your marriage exceptional?
Well, most couples, Roy, think that they're talking to each other all the time. And in fact, if you ask people, they say, yes, we're communicating, no problem.
Talking at each other more than...
Well, yeah, right. Talking at each other, good point. Or they're really talking about just maintaining the household. Who's going to do the dishes, the garbage, call mom, pay the bills?
So what we Sonny.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, to me, that's not communication. What I have found is that happy couples in my study, they talk to each other, but they don't main talk about just maintaining the household.
They also
talk about their dreams, their goals, and their aspirations. So what I encourage couples who want to take it from good to great is to practice the 10-minute rule, and that is 10 minutes, at least 10 minutes. You can talk more, okay? But at least 10 minutes.
No buzzer that goes off. Or like the presidential debates, no ding, ding, ding.
Right. Put the timer on, right? But what you want to do in that 10 minutes is talk about topics other than work, family, or your children. Who's going to do what around the house, or your relationship? So you can't talk about if you're happy, do you feel satisfied. So I have to tell you, though, Roy, a lot of people say, what else can you talk about, especially after 20, 30 years of marriage?
Yeah.
And I say there's lots of other topics. What do you want to do in the next 5 or 10 years? What superhuman power would you want? Or if we won the lottery, where would we travel to and why?
Yeah, I think in your book you also suggest talking about an incident from your spouse's childhood or something you may not know about to learn more about what makes them tick or what their growing up was like or things. You know, I still find out facts about my wife that I didn't know before when I ask her questions about growing up and stuff like that. So I would think that would be a good use of the time also.
Absolutely. You know, I've been married for 23 years, and I thought that I knew everything about my husband, like many of us do with our spouse. But if you really ask new questions, much like you asked when you first met each other and were dating, you said, you'll find out new and interesting information. And that's what really leads to happy, more satisfying, healthier relationships over time.
Yeah, and it takes you away from this bickering or constant concern over what's a major problem today or, you know, what are we going to do with the kids, that kind of stuff. Well, here's another of the five essential steps that I like. Expect less, get more. What exactly do you mean by this step, and how should we go about implementing it?
I know. A lot of people don't like this step because you think that you're lowering your expectations. But what I really found is that it's having realistic expectations that are important for happy, healthy relationships. What we have are these should statements in our head, Roy. We should have this in a happy relationship. Our partner should treat us this way. And if our partner,
I saw that on television and in the commercial.
Exactly. We learn it from television and other people around us. If those expectations or those should statements aren't realistic, or if our partner doesn't know our expectations, they can't meet them. And when our should statements or expectations aren't met, we feel frustration and disappointment. And that eats away at the happiness in our relationship. So I say, write down your top two relationship expectations on a piece of paper and ask your spouse or partner to do the same. Then switch the papers and discuss those expectations. Are they reasonable? How can you make them more? And did you even know what was important to your partner?
Yeah, I love that. You just exchange those expectations. If it's done right, it would be great. I hope it doesn't get into a mutual name calling.
Right. And you know, what I found, though, is that you don't have to have the same expectations. So if your partner thinks that all money should go into one joint checking account or savings account, and you had no idea that he or she felt that way, that's okay. And if you don't agree, that's also okay.
Yeah.
You can discuss and compromise, but it's knowing your partner's expectations, whether they're different or similar to yours, that leads to less expectation and greater happiness over time.
Yeah, I know. Well, where should we go to preview and purchase your brand new paperback or ebook?
Well, I have a website, Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, D-R-T-E-R-R-I, thelovedoctor.com, where you can find out how to get my books, or they're on Amazon.com, where you can order hardcover, paperback, or ebook.
Yeah, lots of choices there. I noticed when I went to Amazon, there's all three of those choices.
Yeah, and I think the book is really easy to read, Roy, with practical, simple steps that you can implement into your relationship.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was very impressed by some of the comments. Some of the notable reviewers point out that a true positive in Dr. Orbach's book is her observations and conclusions are supported by those 30 years of scientific research. But she reports them in vivid everyday syntax that you and I can understand. And as a fellow writer, I also admire the way that you supported your recommendations with representative real-life examples, because that always speaks to people, I think, when real-life examples and stories are there. And at midlife and conclusion, most of us realize that our marriage is not one Hollywood-style, happily ever after, long, continuous high. For most, over the years, marriage remains a work in progress, a continual ebb and flow, and after years together of raising children, managing the household, and maintaining financial discipline, our marriages do tend at times to feel like old hat. Sure, you still love your spouse, but do you really understand who he or she is today and what his or her expectations and aspirations are for tomorrow? And so rather than rushing through the upcoming holidays, why not take some time out this year for reflection, each other alone and both of you together, on how much you love each other, why your spouse means so much to you, and small steps you can take like those Dr. Orbach recommends to demonstrate your love and affection. And don't forget Dr. Terry Orbach's book for a few sure-fired, easy-to-implement steps to supercharge your marriage. No marriage counselor or therapist needed, and a solid plan based upon 30 years of research, and actions and behaviors do improve your marriage in a flash, and they work every time, or at least that's what you tell us, Dr. Orbach, and I'm sure that's true.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Roy, and we all want an exceptional relationship, and my book is all about simple steps and changes that you can make to make it great.
And heck, if your marriage presently already is spectacular, give Dr. Terry's book as a present to someone else who is less fortunate. And once again,
good
the book
idea.
Is titled Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great by Dr. Terry Orbach. And thanks a million for joining us today, Dr. Terry, and a most joyous holiday season both to you and to all of you listening out there. And tune in next week when we'll talk about two possible options for next year. Becoming your own boss or buying into a franchise, might either option be right for you. Until then, throughout the week, keep ever present in mind that middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.